Hello, everyone, and a very happy Sunday evening. Jacqueline and Connie just walked in. I usually use the shelf behind me if I'm sitting there.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. So we are here for the Guiding Light, and I am sharing from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And today I'll be starting on page 43. But before I do that, we will listen to a song. So let's see, the song that I picked it out because when I saw the title, it reminded me of Jacqueline's weekly gathering this morning. This is by Resta Burnham, and it's called Be Still.
Be still, my child, be still, peace. Within my silence, be filled with me. My holy child, I love you so well. Be still, be still, be still. In this moment, in this now, we are forever one. Behind you, tomorrow's and yesterday's, and enter now, my love. Be still, my child, be still in peace. And in my silence, be filled with me. My holy child, I love you so well. Be still, be still. Lay down your burdens, release your cares. Come as a child to my arms. Here in the stillness, light will fill your mind.
As I mentioned, we're here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, and we're going to begin on page 43. And the section that we're in now is called Work and Renunciation. So the questions are primarily coming from people who work for a living and have families and that kind of stuff, which you guys, many of you guys are very familiar with. So the first question: is it possible to enjoy samadhi while busy in worldly work? And I'm going to look up the definition of samadhi. Again, I feel like I know what it means, but I want to see exactly what they call it. An advanced state of meditation. And I think this is probably the important part, absorption in the self. So I would say that's really what samadhi means in this particular sentence. In other words, is it possible to enjoy absorption in self while busy in worldly work? That is the question. So, here we go. This is Ramana Maharshi's answer. The feeling, I work, which is in quotes, so that feeling, the feeling that I work, in other words, it's kind of what we call the feeling of being the doer. The feeling, I work, is the hindrance. Ask yourself, who works? Remember who you are. Then the work will not bind you. It will go on automatically. Make no effort either to work or to renounce. Your effort is the bondage. What is destined to happen will happen. If you are destined not to work, work cannot be had, even if you hunt for it. If you are destined to work, you will not be able to avoid it. You will be forced to engage yourself in it. So leave it to the higher power. You cannot renounce or retain as you choose. So what that says to me is that the body does what the body is meant to do. The problem comes with the mind, you know, like, you know, it can be the simplest thing depending on, you know, let's just talk about the chores that we have around the house, whether it's, you know, cooking or doing dishes or doing laundry or dusting or vacuuming or changing diapers or pulling weeds in the garden or paying bills or, you know, whatever it is that we do. We're going to do those things. But the question is the mind complaining about it while we're doing it? You know, I mean, is I'm paying bills, is the mind going on and on and on about all of these bills and how things are too expensive or how I don't have enough money? You know, when I'm cleaning house and doing dishes, is the mind going on and on and on about how nobody else in the family does their share and how housework never ends? And, you know, that's really what I see Ramana Maharshi is saying the problem is. What the body is doing is unfolding naturally. Think about that. What the body is doing is unfolding naturally. The question is the mind, you know, just being present and still, unless, of course, it's being used to do work? Or is the mind off having a commentary about everything that's going on? And in that commentary, if we listen to that commentary is filled with me. Even if it's filled with others, let's say, you know, I'm doing housework and there are two other people that live here in my house and they don't ever help. One goes in a room and closes the door. The other one sits there and plays games on his computer, you know, and I'm doing all the work, all the housework. You know, and the mind is complaining and complaining and complaining and is talking about them, how she does this and he does this. It may seem to be talking about others, but in reality it's talking about me because it's separating me from the others that it's talking about, right? It's them. It's their fault. And in a them, there is naturally a me, an I. So what mental chatter is always, 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 always doing is reemphasizing the idea of me, of I, of the doer. So let's listen to Ramana Maharshi's answer again, now with that perspective. The feeling I work is the hindrance. Ask yourself, who works? Remember who you are, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Remember who you are. Then the work will not bind you. It will go on automatically. Make no effort either to work or to renounce. Now, if the work is going on automatically, and then he says, make no effort either to work or to renounce, where's that effort occurring? Isn't the effort just in the mind, saying this is how it should be? Not what is, but something different. Like, you know, I'm nearly 60 years old. I shouldn't have to work for a living anymore, right? Or I walk the dog every day. I shouldn't have to walk her again today. I think what I'm going to do is find out how I can get other people to do it. But you see, it's all mental chatter. That's where all the effort is happening. If the mental chatter dies away, if we allow the mind to be still, we'll find that the body just flows naturally into whatever activities it is to do, and just as naturally it doesn't do. And for some of us, that might be the hard part. It might not be the complaining about what we do, because we may have been raised in a culture with a strong work ethic, and we feel pretty good about what we do. It's what we don't do that we feel bad about, right? It's the times when the body's relaxing and the mind's like, oh my God, I should get up and do this and this and this. I should be doing this and this and this. When what's happening is what's happening. The body's relaxing right now. It's taking a day off or an hour off or whatever is happening, right? A few minutes off. So the efforting, the wanting it to be different than it is, occurs in the mind. And if we can let go of the mind, if we can be still in the mind, what we're going to find is that the body does what it does naturally, whether in this moment it's working or whether in this moment it's resting. Right? There's this natural flow that moves the body. So make no effort either to work or to renounce. Your effort is the bondage. What is destined to happen will happen. If you are destined not to work, work cannot be had even if you hunt for it. And here in this particular sentence, when he says, if you're destined not to work, work cannot be had, he's primarily referring to what's considered as typical in Hindu culture, in that sages don't have jobs. You know, for example, Ramana Maharshi did not have a job, right? He didn't have an employer and get a paycheck and all of that. And so, you know, lots of Hindus believe that that's how you be holy, is by not working, right? A holy man doesn't work. And he's saying, you know, if that is your destiny, if that is the way the script is unfolding for you, it's just the way it's going to be. You're not going to be able to get a job, right? Because you're going to be the type of sage that doesn't work. If you are destined not to work, work cannot be had even if you hunt for it. If you are destined to work, you will not be able to avoid it. Now, he uses this language, which some of us may not like, but let's look at it. He says, you will be forced to engage yourself in it. Hello, Jamie. And by force, what he just means is it will automatically occur. Like your mind can chatter and chatter and chatter all at once that it doesn't want to do this, but automatically what's going to be happening is that you're going to have a job and you're going to work. And then he says, so leave it to the higher power. You cannot renounce or retain a job as you choose. Cannot renounce or retain as you choose. You know, to me, this just says trust what is and stop thinking about how it should be different, right? If it's to be different at some point, it will change. So just trust what is exactly as it is. And, you know, if you just imagine for a moment either arguing with what is or trusting what is, you can tell which one gives you a sense of peace and which one gives you a sense of agitation. Right, that's pretty easy to see. Now, there's a sentence here that I said that I would go back to. It says, remember who you are. And of course, when Ramana Maharshi says, remember who you are, he's referring to what we call consciousness or awareness or presence. Right? Notice that part of you that is still. When we forget who we are, who do we think we are, right? The body and the mind. We think we are the body and the mind. And actually what I found in my own inquiry is that we think we are more specifically the mind. The body is secondary. We think we are the body because the mind says we are. The mind says, oh my God, I never get to rest. I have to work my butt off all the time. And we're listening to that I, which is associated with the body. And that's why we think we're the body. But actually what we're foremost listening to is the mind. So if I forget that I'm the awareness that's aware of thought, if I forget that I'm the consciousness that thought appears in and disappears in, then I'm going to think I'm the mind. That's the default. If I forget who I am, I'm going to think I'm the mind. And then also, of course, by association, I'm going to think I'm the body. If I remember who I am, the mind can chatter. And there'll be an observing of the chatter without a believing. Noticing is the word that's often used. Just an observing of the chatter without believing. You know, a still mind, I think, is a wonderful thing. I love it when my mind's still. But my goodness, thank goodness, thank goodness, thank goodness, I don't need a still mind to be happy. Because if I needed a still mind to be happy, I'd be one unhappy girl. The way that I discover to be happy is simply not believing the mind, not being attached to the mind, just seeing the mind as the mind and not as me. Right? Byron Katie talks about that, not being a believer. Right? If I get caught up in the mind and I believe the mind, then I'm going to feel the emotions that go along with the mind stories. And sometimes that may be happiness, but most certainly not all the time. And if I think I need to have a still mind, isn't that just wishing things were different again? In fact, listen to that sentence. If I think I need a still mind, isn't that just another thought? So if I think I need a still mind and the mind is not still, I'm not going to be happy either because I want it to be different than it is. But if I remember who I am, regardless of what's occurring with the mind, what's occurring with the body, what's occurring with the world, then I'm happy. Because I'm just the observer of it all, right? I'm just the presence that it's occurring in. It has nothing, it has nothing to do with me. So I'll read this question and answer one more time and see if there's anything else that comes out of it to be had. So again, the question is it possible to enjoy samadhi? And the definition that we saw was really being absorbed in the self, the true self. So is it possible to enjoy being absorbed in the true self while busy in worldly work? And Ramana Maharshi said, the feeling I work is the hindrance. Ask yourself, who works? Remember who you are. Then the work will not bind you. It will go on automatically. Make no effort either to work or to renounce. Your effort is the bondage. You're wanting it to be different than it is the bondage. Right? That's what I hear in your effort, is the bondage. You're wanting it to be different than it is the bondage. What is destined to happen will happen. If you are destined not to work, work cannot be had even if you hunt for it. If you are destined to work, you will not be able to avoid it. You will be forced to engage yourself in it. And again, the word forced here just means it'll happen automatically, no matter how much your mind complains about it. So leave it to the higher power. You cannot renounce or retain as you choose. All right, so the next question. Bhagavan said yesterday that while one is engaged in search of God within, outer work would go on automatically. In the life of Sri, I don't know how to say this, I'll just do my best, Chaitanya, maybe, in the life of Sri Chaitanya, it is said that during his lectures to students, he was really seeking Krishna, or the true self within, forgot all about his body, and went on talking of Krishna only. This raises a doubt whether work can safely be left to itself. Should one keep part attention on the physical work? So, one way that we might ask that kind of question is, can I really be absorbed in the self and drive a car? Is that safe? Or, what if I work with heavy machinery at my job, or I'm sawing down trees with a chainsaw, I was cutting a watermelon with a big knife, can I be absorbed in the self and do that kind of work too? Because, that sounds a little dangerous, right? That's where this question is coming. Here's Ramana Maharshi's answer. The self is all. Are you apart from the self? Or can the work go on without the self? The self is universal. So all actions will go on whether you strain yourself to be engaged in them or not. The work will go on of itself. Thus, Krishna told Arjuna that he need not trouble to kill the Kauravas. They were already slain by God. It was not for him to resolve to work and worry himself about it, but to allow his own nature to carry out the will of the higher power. So the first thing that I hear in this answer is, it seems that Ramana Maharshi is pointing out that the questioner is kind of separating the self and the world. I'm either abiding in the self or I'm focusing on my work. As if there's some kind of a conflict there, Ramana Maharshi seems to be saying that the self is all and you can't ever be apart from the self. So even if you're focusing on, traffic, you're in heavy traffic and it's going fast and you're paying attention to lane changes and that kind of thing, there doesn't need to be a thought that you're separate from the self. It's not like, oh my gosh, I'm not abiding in the self right now because I'm paying attention to traffic, right? That in itself is a thought. And in fact, if we trust what Ramana Maharshi said earlier about how work will occur naturally, which, by the way, was even quoted in this particular question, that work will go on automatically, well, then I would say that if the mind becomes engaged in the work, like if the mind is focusing on the traffic in the moment, I mean, that's not mental chatter, right? That's the work. And if the mind is focused on the traffic and paying attention to the traffic, that's a part of the automatic work. And that there would be no feeling at all that there's separation from the self in that unless one believes the thought it's supposed to be different than it is. I'm not supposed to be focused on traffic and lane changes and all of that right now. You see, that's a thought. And in fact, if you look at it very carefully, just paying attention to the traffic and the lane changes and all of that kind of thing, there's actually no I thought just in doing that by itself. The I thought, however, does come in when there's the thought, I shouldn't be doing this. I should be absorbed in the self instead of paying attention to traffic. That's where the I thought came in. So if we trust that the work will go on naturally, then we can also trust when the mind has a role in the work. The mind is like a tool, right? When we're not listening to chatter, the mind is just a tool. And the mind most definitely gets involved in some work. When I got my new car's quite a bit different than my older car. And for like the first, I would say, 3 days that I had my new car last June, I had to really pay attention to the driving because it was a bigger car. It felt different. It wasn't natural. What happened after about 3 days was my brain wired itself. So although I still pay attention to the driving, I didn't have to pay attention as much, right? Because the brain was now kind of wired and more used to the car and knew how much space it needed and didn't have to think about that. So the brain in the first 3 days when it was thinking and noticing the difference in the size of the car and the height of the car, and of course how fast the car goes feels different, right? I would be going 80 when I thought I was going 60, so I had to learn the difference in how it felt. In those first 3 days when the brain was programming itself to naturally work with this new car, that mental activity needed to occur. That was a natural part of the task. And then once the brain was wired so it was familiar with the height and the size and the speed of this car, then that level of attention was no longer needed, right? So the mind does get involved in a task in a tool-like way when it needs to. And my goodness, what a horrible mistake to say, I shouldn't be paying attention to the difference in how this car feels. I should be absorbed in the self. That's just an I thought. That's just a guilt trip that I'm giving myself. Right? That's just a judgment. So Ramana Maharshi says the self is all. Are you apart from the self? Or can the work go on without the self? The self is universal. So all actions will go on, whether you strain yourself to be engaged in them or not. So let's talk about that word, strain yourself. If we go back to my story about my first 3 days with the new car, it was natural for the mind to be involved in getting used to the difference and kind of reprogramming itself to be used to the new car. If I had an I thought that I shouldn't be paying as much attention to driving during that period of time, and I should be focused on the self more, that would have been a strain, a judgment. It should be different than it is, and a strain to try and be different than what was natural, right? He says, all actions will go on whether you strain yourself to be engaged in them or not. So what we really have to pay attention to, you know, is what's natural and where am I straining to make it different or try and be different? And you can feel that, right? You can feel that. You know, what if you had some crazy thought? And actually, you know, I say what if you had some crazy thought, but I've heard so many spiritual students have these crazy thoughts over the years. I know this is how the ego gets in the mind and confuses us. What if you had some crazy thought that you should be able to add numbers or subtract numbers without the mind? You know, you're trying to balance a checkbook and you have this idea, oh, the mind is bad, because that's how the ego interprets this stuff, right? The mind is bad. I'm not supposed to use the mind. I should just magically know the numbers. I shouldn't have to think to add or subtract. Aren't you just going to give yourself a guilt trip? Isn't that the strain? If you just sit down and balance the checkbook and just add and subtract the numbers, isn't that the easy, natural way? Isn't the mind automatically a part of that task? So look for what's natural and look for where you're creating a strain because you think it should be different than what's natural or automatic. All actions will go on whether you strain yourself to be engaged in them or not. The work will go on of itself. And again, even when the mind is involved in reprogramming the brain for a new car, or when the mind is involved in adding or subtracting as you balance the checkbook, That's natural, and that's the work going on of itself using natural tools. Let's look at another way, because again, I know people get confused and they judge the mind like the mind shouldn't be here. But would you say the hands shouldn't be there when you're doing dishes? Would you say the legs and the feet shouldn't be there when you're walking? No, yeah, it's silly, isn't it, Kathy? Of course the hands are supposed to be there when I'm doing the dishes. Of course the legs and the feet need to be there when I'm walking. And of course the mind needs to be there during some tasks. Right? So we get a little ridiculous. It's the chatter. It's the stories. That's what we want to let go of. But the mind as a tool is no different than hands, arms, legs, feet, heart, lungs, kidneys, and so on, right? They all are tools and they all have a job to do. And some of them we don't think about at all. I mean, I never think about my heart, lungs, or kidneys. I certainly never judge whether they're doing it right or doing it wrong or should be working now or should not be working now. Why do I treat the mind as different? Isn't that just another mental judgment? So all actions will go on whether you strain yourself to be engaged in them or not. The work will go on of itself. Thus, Krishna told Arjuna that he need not trouble to kill the Kauravas. They were already slain by God. It was not for him to resolve to work and worry himself about it, but to allow his own nature to carry out the will of the higher power. The next question, which I think shows that the questioner just doesn't understand, because he says, but the work may suffer if I do not attend to it. You know, before I go and look at Ramana Maharshi's answer, I want to say, who is this I? Again, if the mind is to be engaged in the work, the mind will naturally be engaged in the work. You don't have to tell the mind, okay, mind, we're going to do math now. I need you. Right? It just naturally comes in when you're doing math. Right? And if we're not listening to chatter, it naturally goes out when you're doing the dishes. Because it's not needed in that task, not unless you're learning to do dishes. When you were little, assuming your mom trained you when you were little, when the brain was being programmed to do dishes, there may have had to be some thought, right? But at some point, doing the dishes becomes automatic. The brain is programmed to do the dishes, and the mind is not needed. And so it can be still, and you can be the presence of awareness while doing the dishes. At least in my case, with math, the mind is still needed, right? I don't just look at the numbers and know the answers. Maybe some of you do. I don't know. You know, we all have different kinds of brains. But this person is still thinking this I needs to be in charge. He's not seeing that the mind, if it needs to be involved in a task, will naturally come in, and if it doesn't need to be involved in the task, will naturally step out. He's thinking he, whoever this he is, this I need to be in charge. If I don't make sure the mind shows up for math, it might not. Right? I need to somehow, who is this I? Who is this I that needs to be in control? He says, but the work may suffer if I do not attend to it. Ramana Maharshi says, attending to the self means attending to the work. Because you identify yourself with the body, you think that work is done by you. But the body and its activities, including that work, are not apart from the self. So what he's really saying here again is if the mind needs to come into the work, it will. The self, like I said, do you tell the mind, I'm doing math now, I need you, get up here. That all happens naturally. Right? It occurs naturally. This is all happening, the way Ramana words it, by the self. Let me read this again. Again, the questioner, thinking there's some I here that's in control, says that the work may suffer if I do not attend to it. Ramana Maharshi says, attending to the self means attending to the work. Because you identify yourself with the body, you think that work is done by you. But the body and its activities, including that work, are not apart from the self. Now, I'd like to point out that I started reading on page 43, and then the last part of this reading that I just read was on page 44. And what happened in the process was, of course, the eyes are looking at the book. I assume that the brain is interpreting these markings on the page and turning them into words. But the reason, see, I assume is because the brain is so wired to do that, I don't even have to think about that. Now, when I was learning, I did, right? Remember that? Do you remember that? There was a time you had to do that. But now it just happens. The brain is wired. You are wiring the brain then, right? You were programming the brain to read when you were learning. Now the brain is wired. So now it kind of happens like in a background. But the body and its activities, right, that happened automatically. But another thing that happened automatically, when I came to the end of page 43, which actually is in the middle of a word, it's IN dash, even to see what the rest of the word is, the hand had to turn the page, including, right? It's IN dash, and then we have including on the next page, including. There was nobody here in control saying, hand, turn the page now. Right? It just did. So the eyes are seeing. The mind is interpreting those funny marks on the page into words that have meaning. The mouth is saying them. The hand is turning the page. Where's this I that needs to make all of that happen? It's imaginary. I mean, I could take credit, right? Chatter could come in and say, I'm the one doing the teaching here. Me. I turned the page. Me, right? But that's just chatter. All of this is happening without an I. Right? All of this is happening with, it's just happening. Even the teaching. My God, if I had to think about what I was going to say before I say it, if I had to do this, it would be like this. It would be, but the body and its activities, including that work, are not part from the self. And then I'd have to say, what shall I say about that? Gosh, let me think for a moment. Oh, I already forgot what I read. Let me read that again. You know, like it would be disastrous. This is just happening. The speaking is happening. The reading is happening. The page turning is happening. Your listening is happening. Are you telling your ears to listen? Are you telling your mind to understand with the ears here? Or is it all just happening? You see? The I is made up. This I that has to attend to the work is made up. Sure, there may be attention in the work, but the attention is then placed on the work by the self, right? It naturally occurs. If I'm driving through downtown Denver at a time when it's pretty crowded, but not so crowded that traffic slowed down, everybody's going 60 miles an hour, there's lots of traffic everywhere, I naturally am more attentive than when I'm the only one driving down a dirt road in Pueblo West. Naturally, more attentive. Right? I don't have to say, oops, attention, get in here, we need you now. Right? It naturally occurs. The I, saying that I have to pay attention, is made up. The attention will show up on its own when it's a part of the task. So again, this person says, but the work may suffer if I do not attend to it. Ramana Maharshi says, attending to the self means attending to the work. Because you identify yourself with the body, you think that work is done by you. But the body and its activities, including that work, are not apart from the self. What does it matter whether you attend to the work or not? Suppose you walk from one place to another. You do not attend to the steps you take, yet you find yourself after a time at your goal. Now again, Ramana Maharshi is pointing out what I've already pointed out, that sometimes attention isn't needed. Right? You know, when we were learning to walk, we probably had to pay attention. We were learning to walk. We were trying to figure out that balance thing, trying to figure out how big to move the legs, how big of a step, how little of a step, right? But now the brain is programmed how to walk. We don't have to pay attention to walking. Right? Suppose you walk from one place to another. You do not attend to the steps you take, yet you find yourself after a time at your goal. You see how the business of walking goes on without your attending to it. So also with other kinds of work. And again, we've spoken about that, you know, doing dishes, for example, right? There are types of work that your brain is programmed to do, and attention doesn't need to be called forth. Mind doesn't need to be called forth to pay attention to that type of task. Like it may be needed in another type of task, but even then it doesn't need to be called forth. It just naturally comes forth. So the real thing we have to look at is this idea of me. Right? The next question. It is then like sleepwalking, the devotee says. It is then like sleepwalking. And I'm going to look up this word just to see what it is. Oh, sleepwalking. Ramana Maharshi just likes to use big words. So, the devotee says, it is then like sleepwalking. And Ramana Maharshi says, like somnambulism. You know how to say that? Big word, huh?
Yeah, big word.
So I look up somnambulism, and it says sleepwalking. So one more definition. You know, it's not even a certain type of sleepwalking or a certain character about sleepwalking. It is sleepwalking. So here we go. Never knew he was a high school dropout. It is then like sleepwalking, the devotee says. And Ramana Maharshi basically says, like sleepwalking? Quite so. When a child is fast asleep, his mother feeds him. The child eats the food just as well when he is fully awake. But the next morning he says to the mother, Mother, I did not take food last night. The mother and others know that he did, but he says that he did not. He was not aware. Still the action had gone on. And again, there are so many things that we do during the day. You know, like just now I noticed it because I guess I was supposed to. But I have this watch. It's a Fitbit. And you're supposed to wear the Fitbit loosely around your wrist. And so every now and then it kind of slides way down on the wrist. And I just moved it back up to where it was a little looser again. I did that quite naturally. I wonder how many times every day I do that and I don't notice. Right? The activity goes on, without a me. Right? The activity of just moving the watch back to a loose position goes on without a me. As Ramana Maharshi is saying, it's like a child who, when he's asleep, eats food. I actually never fed my child when she was asleep. But Ramana Maharshi is saying, I've seen children nurse drink from a bottle or nurse from the mother's breast when they were asleep rather than eating and chewing food. But Ramana Maharshi says, the child that eats the food while asleep eats just as well as when they're awake. The difference is that the child isn't aware, but the action goes on just as well. The body knew how to chew the food, knew how to swallow the food. There didn't have to be an I present paying attention. Ramana Maharshi continues, a traveler in a cart has fallen asleep. The bulls move, stand still, or are unyoked during the journey. He does not know these events, but finds himself in a different place after he wakes up. He has been blissfully ignorant of the occurrences on the way, but the journey has been finished. Similarly, with the true self of a person, the ever wakeful true self is compared to the traveler asleep in the cart. The waking state is the moving of the bulls. Samadhi is their standing still. That is to say, the person is aware but not concerned in the action. Sleep is the unyoking of the bulls, for there is complete stopping of activity corresponding to the relief of the bulls from the yoke. Or again, take the instance of the cinema. Scenes are projected on the screen in the cinema show, but the moving pictures do not affect or alter the screen. The spectator pays attention to them, not to the screen. They cannot exist apart from the screen, yet the screen is ignored. So also, the self is the screen where the pictures, activities, etc. are seen going on. The man is aware of the latter, but not aware of the essential former. All the same, the world of pictures is not apart from the self. Whether he is aware of the screen or unaware, the actions will continue. So what Ramana Maharshi is saying in these last two paragraphs, with the example of the bulls pulling the cart and the example of the cinema show, is he is saying that whether we are fully focused on the action, you know, like the man at the movie is fully focused on the movie, or whether we are not fully focused on the activity, like the man sleeping in the cart was not at all aware of being moved from one location to the other till they woke up. Either way, the self is present and the activity is occurring. Another way to look at that is whether I think of me, whether I'm thinking of me, being identified with this mind and body and saying, I'm doing the work, or whether I'm not thinking of me, right? The work is going on. Let's use an example that we're all super familiar with, I think, which is driving a car. Again, sometimes when you're driving a car, you might be thinking of you. You might be thinking, oh, look how good I am at going in and out of the traffic. You know, I cut that guy off. I'm such a good driver, right? You could be thinking that. Or you could be thinking, oh, what a horrible driver I am. I didn't even see that guy and I almost hit him, you know, even though you didn't, right? So all of this commentary can be happening and there can appear to be a me present. Or, as you know, you can be driving and moving in and out of traffic and stopping at stop signs and turning corners and getting off highways and getting on highways and not paying any attention at all, and that all still happens. Right? usually in our case, however, that happens because we're lost in mind. But we could just be aware, just be presence, and the driving would just be happening in the same way. The point is that the activity is naturally occurring. Sometimes we're there claiming the activity. Sometimes we're not there claiming the activity. But the activity occurs whether we claim it or not. And then there's another point that he makes that goes even beyond that. Whether I am claiming the activity, I am doing this driving. But whether I'm not claiming the activity, driving is just happening. Either way, it's occurring within the self. He calls that the essential. Well, in this sentence, he says the essential former, because he talked about the self first, so it was former first in the sentence. But the essential self, the essential consciousness is there, whether I'm being presence, awareness, without claiming, without the thinking, or whether I'm being all caught up in the claiming and the thinking and the judging. Either way, the activity is happening, and either way, the self is present. And what's really interesting is he refers to the self, or he refers to the consciousness, as essential. He does not refer to the me as essential. The me may be there. The me may not be there. The activity is happening. The self is present. The self is the essential. It's the essential factor, right? Now, this guy, he doesn't want to give up me, because listen to what he says next. But there's an operator in the cinema. He's arguing with Ramana Maharshi. But that film doesn't just happen, right? There's a guy back there, you know? The guy is needed, right? This is what he wants to believe. Ramana Maharshi says, the cinema show is made out of insentient materials. The lamp, the pictures, the screen, etc. are all insentient, and so they need an operator, the sentient agent. On the other hand, the self is absolute consciousness, and therefore self-contained. There cannot be an operator apart from the self. So, you know, sometimes I guess we can take examples a little too literally, and this guy did, right? Took the example a little too literally. But again, the point that Ramana Maharshi is making is the self is the essential factor. The me is optional. Think about that. The work will go on of itself. If mind is needed in the task, the mind will come forth and participate in the task just like the hands do, or the legs and the feet do, or the lungs do, and the heart does, right? It doesn't need a director, a driver. It doesn't need to say, okay, mind, you're on stage now. Okay, hands, do the dishes. The self takes care of all of that. We make up me. Me is not essential. And yet it's the me that gives us all the grief. Let's see. I feel to stop here, although this conversation is not done. My guess is if I was to continue reading, it would be a little too complicated to complete in 6 minutes. I just feel a sudden stop here. So I'm going to stop here. And we're going to play a song instead. And we'll continue this. I won't be here next Sunday, so we'll continue this in 2 weeks. Would you believe it's almost time to turn the page on the calendar again?
It's amazing.
It's amazing, isn't it? All right, so let me find another song. Oops, that's not music. This is music. And let's go here. And let's sort by time. And we have 5 minutes left, so let's pick a 5-minute song. Here's one called One of Us by Joan Osborne. I love this song. So let's listen to this one.
So one of these nights and about 12 o'clock, this old earth's gonna be laying rock. Saints we all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.